All right, we are live. And again, we missed our intro music. You know what? Maybe that's okay because we know the Seahawks will be fine without it. But what is up, 12s? Thank you so much for joining us on another Tuesday Seahawks Collective presented by Hog Media. It is wild that we are gearing up for the NFC Championship, and not just any championship, but a home game at Lumen Field. The Seahawks have history and clearly some seismic activity recorded at the stadium last weekend on their side. But will that be enough for a third matchup against Matthew Stafford and the Rams? We will go to our Seahawks insiders for that. Michael Sean Dugar, covering the Hawks for The Athletic, Brian Nemhauser, the Hawk blogger, and Rob Staton from the Seahawks draft blog. You guys, I wanted to text all three of you at some point last weekend with questions, comments, just emotions that I had. But I was like, you know what? I got to save it for the Seahawks Collective because I feel like I cannot be alone in some of the things that I want to hear. But feel free to leave your emotions, your comments in the chat, and we'll get to it if we can tonight. But we have a lot to cover, but I'm sure everyone remembers those moments when news broke. You know where you were. So, Brian, I'll start with you. Where were you when Rashid Shaheed said, "No, I'm going to break the news, the first play of the game, that yes, the Seahawks, we came to play"?
Man, I was in the stands, in my seats, and I will tell you this, AB. I was pretty confident. I mean, I talked about on this show, I've talked about on a bunch of other shows, that the Seahawks were a significantly better team than the 49ers. And, you know, my score prediction ended up being like 37-13 or something like that. But as the game got closer, you can't help but feel a little bit of nerves and feel stress and feel like, my God, if they don't win this game, all that they've done to get to this point will just feel a little bit empty because they're just so much better and this is such a great opportunity. And so when Rashid Shaheed took that opening kick all the way and, you know, darn the freaking cheap shot kicker with his slide tackle attempt, you know, that flag, I've learned over the years, I do not celebrate until I know what the flag is. My buddy is in my ear. It's tripping. It's going to be good. And I'm like, I'm just have my hands up waiting. And then finally, after what felt like 3 years, they're like, the result of the play is a touchdown. And I went crazy after everyone else had already done that. So, yeah, it was a really fun way to get a big, big game started.
It was also really fun just to watch the different angles from Lumen Field of the different fans and their perspectives from their phones. Mike, what was that moment like for you?
That was really cool. I just kind of knew that he would take one to the house at some point. I'm actually in a fantasy football pool where we like draft players, and then it's like total points. There's no matchups. You just, if your guy scores, you get points, and then once they're out, they're out. And this year when I was drafting, I was like, hey, just to be clear on the rules, if Shaheed takes one to the house, is that 6 points? And then the commissioner said, yeah. So like, all right, I'm drafting Shaheed. So like, I was always very confident that like, I'm out of that pool, by the way. I had 4 Jags, but, like, I just knew he was that going to have one of those type of moments. That's just what he's been doing, you know? And I think we talked about it last week that you just want guys to, in the playoffs, just be them, just be who they've been to get you here. And Shaheed did exactly that. His special teams contributions quite literally got them here. So to see that happen for him, super cool. And that is actually when I knew the game was a wrap. I was like, yeah, they're just not ready today. The Niners, I mean.
You knew it. You knew it right off the bat. It's probably the Seahawks felt it too. And Rob, I saw that you tweeted out that you felt like you had played in the first half of this game. Did you celebrate with your own like 95-yard sprint?
Well, I'm going to tell you the most British and most middle-class story ever now. So what happened was, I last week was tough. I must admit, I didn't sleep very much. I was nervous about the game. Not for any like real fear about the two teams. It was just, I really wanted the Seahawks to win. So it was hard to sort of wait a week to watch that game. So what I did is I bought myself a scone as a treat.
A scone.
Yeah. Okay. I call it a scone. A lot of other people call it a scone.
Can call whatever you want. I just was clarifying.
It's like a war in England. Like if you call it a scone or a scone, like it's a big, I don't know if you guys have that, but anyway, I bought a scone, very British scone, as a treat to sort of just give me a little pick me up before the game. And I was so into the game that was on before that I didn't eat the scone. So I waited for it to finish and then thought, right, I'm going to go and make the scone. So went into the kitchen. Kettle goes on for a cup of tea because I'm English. And scone is being prepared. And then I remembered that because the game had gone to overtime, the early game, they were going to go straight to the Seahawks game. So I was like, ah, crap, like get the TV on, put the TV on in the kitchen. They were lining up to take the kick. So I had half a scone in one hand, a knife in the other, and watched the kickoff in the kitchen. And then obviously he scored. So I, yes, I did make a lot of noise. I woke up every other member of my household at that point.
And they see you holding a knife and a scone and they're like, what is going on?
Well, and after the celebration finished, I went into the main room and enjoyed a scone. So it was great. Like it was the perfect start to the game.
I thought you were going to say that you spiked it, you know, that you just like spiked the scone into the ground.
Yeah. I admit that it's a ridiculous story, but it's a very British story. And it set the tone for what was a fantastic early hours of the morning for me.
Hey, treat yourself. You know, it's always good to do that on a Seahawks game day. And, you know, we'll be seeing that play, I think, for years to come on repeat. But it really did happen so fast. We probably missed how it actually happened. So, Brian, when you look back at just that play, who was maybe an unsung hero that we need to give credit to?
Well, I think you got to start with Jay Harbaugh. And, you know, I talked to Patrick O'Connell, linebacker, after the game in the locker room, and Brady Russell as well, who both were, you know, key blocks, maybe the key blocks on that return. And I noticed from the stands, I was like, I don't remember a time when they've had a single returner back. Now, Patio said that, yeah, they hadn't shown it for a while. So it implies they have done it. I haven't gone back and verified that they've ever done it, but I don't remember ever seeing them have a single returner back. And so they had 10 up to block up at the line. And that was because Jay Harbaugh found something and they decided to run it out there. And I mean, I've lost count of how many times we have heard from a special teams player that, oh yeah, Jay Harbaugh saw something in punt protection. He saw something in kick protection. He saw something like in whatever that ends up not just being like, oh, that was beneficial. Like you get a 10-yard return instead of a 2-yard return. It's like, oh no, we're going to score touchdowns on special teams like in 6 games or whatever it's been. So yeah, he's a guy that I believe is going to end up being potentially a head coaching candidate at some point. I think he is that smart and having this kind of impact on special teams. There's going to be teams that are like, I remember a Harbaugh that became a pretty good coach that started as a special teams guy. And, you know, he just got hired by the Giants. So, yeah, I think Jay Harbaugh deserves a lot of praise.
Just take all our coordinators while we're at it. You know, just get rid of the whole coaching staff. Come on. I mean, we're just that good. But, Brian, you must be on a nickname basis, Patio. Patrick O'Connell, like you were saying, did call Jay Harbaugh a mastermind of football. And, Mike, I'm just interested from you. What have you been seeing about how he's really drawing up scoring opportunities for this team?
Yeah, the kickoff thing is always been interesting to me since I kind of figured out how the rule worked. I think they debuted it in the UFL, XFL, whatever they were calling it at the time. And I was actually kind of curious because there was talk at the time of like, okay, how do you do your personnel, right? Do you put like linemen out there because you can kind of set it up like a run play? You can get pretty creative on there if you got the right guys, the right coordinator, you know, the speedsters to make it work on the run back. And it's been cool to kind of see the different ways Jay has weaponized that. You even see it on this return where it's like there's that gap because of how they set it. Almost had like a puller for the return, which makes sense, right? Because you are essentially executing a run play with funky spacing. So that's been really cool. I mean, their coverage units have just been good the whole time. I mean, they're just really just a complete, you know, team. It's really cool to see the evolution, not just from something like the Jets game last year, which was just bad. Mostly because of bad ball security, which I don't really toss on the coordinator. But even compared to like the Giants game last year, where it's like the other team, we're talking about the other team's coordinator, found something in the Seahawks kick field goal team and exploited that and ended up losing that. You know, the roles are reversed. It just feels like that's what this game was about too. Just complete reversal from so many bad trends, particularly against the Niners and last time they were in the playoffs where they looked – completely outmatched all the way. Now it looked like, again, from the first, literally the first time anyone touched the ball, it was like, all right, the Seahawks are ready, the Niners are not. It just, having watched some bad Seahawks teams in recent years, like, that was just a totally cool experience.
It's crazy. We could do a whole Seahawks collective just on the incredible special teams plays that we've seen throughout this entire season on the offensive side and really the defensive side of it. But the big question coming into this game was, how will Sam Darnold play and how will he do with this oblique injury? And we did see him have a stellar performance in that, making some incredible throws. But Rob, for you, you know, do you think he'll get in a full week of practice this week? Where are you seeing that shaking out?
I don't know. I think it was really encouraging because the first pass was a little bit underthrown, and you did start to wonder, hang on a minute, is this going to be a bit of an issue here? And I felt like we'd had 2 days of unnecessary stress as a consequence of it just being a talking point. Like, I was really looking for, you know, I kind of watch everything, like, when, especially when the big games are on.
He watches everything, but we can't hear him, so we don't know.
I like this version of Rob.
Maybe Rob's grabbing another scone.
I wish we had this kind of remote control, like click on Rob whenever we wanted to pause him, rewind him.
Brian, I'm interested from you just being around the team and closely following the Seahawks throughout this time with Sam's oblique injury. Have you heard anything about maybe the treatment that he's doing or maybe any injections that he's gotten?
No, yeah, I have not. And I mean, I think there's some assumptions about how they treated it game day, but I don't know that. Mike might have more information about that. I'll just say this. I mean, like, Mike McDonald was pretty honest that he wasn't sure. Like, they were hopeful and confident that he would be okay and be able to play. But they didn't know until he was actually out there and throwing, and Sam wouldn't really know. So this is a type of injury that, for some people, I think it was Derek Carr maybe that had an injury, an oblique injury, and just basically just couldn't throw. Like, it wasn't a pain tolerance thing. It was just like that muscle wasn't firing and he could not throw the football properly. And so I think that they were mostly hopeful, but a little bit fingers crossed. And the fact that he was able to go out there and play the way he did, and that he did not need to throw 40 passes in this game, and he did not need to, play the whole game. All of those things, I think, were really helpful in terms of what the expectations were versus how they worked out. And, you know, that's as much time as I can fill until we get Rob back. So hopefully he's got the rest of his.
Rob,
you're never going to believe this.
Did you just grab a scone?
No, what I just said, the greatest thing that anything has ever been said about the Seahawks, and I can't remember what it was. So,
and no one was here to hear it, but that's okay. Yeah. Rob, just wondering your perspective on maybe how the Seahawks would handle Sam Darnold's oblique injury.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of stress, wasn't there, about going into the game. And, Adam Schefter's tweet just before the game caused a lot of anxiety for me personally, and I'm sure a lot of other people, because it just felt as if he was leading us down a path, really, that it made it more serious than it was. And I think, as Kyle Shanahan said after the game, like, once the painkiller has kicked in, you're going to kind of be okay. And he was. Now, if this game ends up being a very different game and he needs to throw, say, 30 times, is that going to make it more of an issue? If he is forced into situations where he's hit a lot more, is that going to make more of an issue? I don't know. There may be sort of passes that he has to throw downfield into tight windows to try and win this game that he didn't have to make because it was a blowout last weekend. So there's all of that to contend with. But I thought it was really encouraging the way that he played, at least in this game. And it's kind of put my mind at ease. And I'm ready. I think it's time. I'm going to be positive about Sam Darnold this week. Like, he sort of got over that Rams issue in the last game with the way that he came back in that one. So I think this is it now. Like, go out there, have a clean game of football. And if the Seahawks don't turn it over in this game, I think they're going to be playing in the Super Bowl 2 weeks later.
Mm.
Mike, curious to know if you've heard anything. We love the sound of that, but we have one more to get to. I'm a little hesitant before we jump there, Rob, as excited as I am. But Mike, just have you heard anything on how maybe Sam has internalized this? Because you heard him come out to that initial press conference and I was a little nervous, but once I heard him say 0%, I'm not playing or whatever he had that sentiment, I was like, okay, we're good. He's going to do anything to be out there on that field.
Yeah, so the way that availability works on Thursdays, this particular Thursday, is that Kubiak was to speak, and then Durde, and then Sam. And then because they were playing on a Saturday, we got the game statuses on Thursday. Typically, we would get those on a Friday before a Sunday game. So right then, the PR guy comes up, and he reads off who's out and was like, all right, we got Josh Jones, and all right, Sam, questionable with an oblique. And it was like, wait, it was like a record scratch. And I was like, wait, time out. What do you mean, Sam, oblique? What are you talking about? And then Kubiak goes, and he's like, Drew Lock took some snaps today. It was like, okay, so he's got this anxiety building. But then Sam's he's going to speak. So for me, I was like, okay, I don't think Mike McDonald has a history of putting the QB1 up there if he's not going to play. And then Sam says he's going to be fine. The next day, Mike says he's going to be fine. And he says something I thought was very important. He says, we're not going to put Sam out there if he can't do his job. You know, and all year, Mike has been telling us that his philosophy with backups is he doesn't go, such and such has to play. It's like, no, if he has you on the team and he's prepping you every week, he has a plan for you, and he puts you out there, he's going to be excited to see you go, whether that's Drew Lock, Ty Okada, or Amari Kite. It doesn't matter. If you're on the team, 1 through 70, he's got a plan for you. So once he said that, I interpreted that as they'll put 100% of Drew out there over a percentage of Sam who can't throw left or who can't roll out or whatever limitation our brain says he can't do because of the oblique thing. So once I got there, I was fine. And that's why I hated Schefter's tweet. I woke up, had a bunch of people hit me like, Mike, what's going on? Our QB can't throw. I was like, wait, literally nothing changed between Friday afternoon and Saturday morning. Like, even our news team at The Athletic hit me like, we need an update. I'm like, there is no update. Nothing has changed. They just had a walkthrough Friday. So I was actually pretty confident. Like, they wanted me to get like some pregame video of him throwing beforehand. I was at a baby shower in Tacoma. There was no chance I was doing that. I didn't show
like,
up.
You're like, Brian, FaceTime me. I'm gonna scream well, call.
I was like, if Brian's got it, if Bob's got it, I was like looking at their feeds at the shower. I'm like, hey man, if I'll just retweet this and keep it pushing. Like, I just had no interest in that. And what do you know, Sam didn't even warm up. And then by the time I got there, I walked on the concourse, took an 8-second video, and walked up and started eating. So I didn't miss anything. So I just, long story short, I just wasn't that worried because I just of how Mike operates. You know, if he had to put Drew out there, he would have, you know. And then post game, you always get this game with telephone. It's very fun as a reporter for me. You ask guys, did you have any worry that Sam wouldn't play? And you get like 20 different answers. Ken was like, I didn't know. Eric Salbert was like, oh yeah, I knew the whole time. And then like other guys just randomly was like, I knew, I didn't know, I knew, I didn't know. Like, it was a bunch of guys who all had different answers. So that was kind of fun. But I kind of leaned towards guys feeling confident in whoever they were going to put out there, which is the point. I think Jalen Milroe maybe could have gone out. Rob could have gone out there, and they probably would have beat the Niners, honestly. And with the kick return, they literally didn't need to score any more points than what Shahid gave them, you know? So that it didn't matter, but I was confident Sam was going to be fine.
Hey, Seahawks Collective listeners, let us know if the Seahawks had to throw one of us in there, who would you take? Who would you want? Who would you want to see out there on Lumen playing for your Seahawks? But, you know,
wait, AB, I got to jump in. They need some information to make that decision.
Okay.
I got to admit something, that I was screaming enough and clapping hard enough to try to make noise at this game that I have a sore shoulder. Just from clapping during this game. So
we thank
keep that
you,
in
Brian.
Mind
we
when you're evaluating you the athletic ability of the four of us.
Hey, maybe you'll get someone to jump off sides, Brian. That's a skill you could potentially use. But Mike, when you were talking about being surprised in that presser, when you heard the Seahawks mention that Sam had the oblique, you can only imagine what the Broncos reporters felt like in that press conference after the game with Bo Nix, right? And Brian, I did hear you talk to Ty Okada after the game and just how, you know, there's this narrative of Sam Darnold in the postseason. And he basically said, I'll defer to what Ernest Jones said about that in essence. And I won't repeat what he said, but just when you've been watching this quarterback in the postseason this year. How would you describe his performances? Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold's. I mean, I think there's a, he's a really interesting player because everyone's got a strong opinion on Sam Darnold. And most of them are pretty negative. I mean, even among Seahawks fans who have warmed to him, I think there's still a little bit of hesitation. And what I've seen from Sam is the most impressive thing I've seen from him is that he has made different mistakes most of the time. Yes, he's turned the ball over a lot. But if you go and you look at a lot of the turnovers, they're different kinds of turnovers, different kinds of mistakes. And, you know, early in the season, he was getting rid of the ball really quickly, not getting sacked at all, and also not turning the ball over. That was great. In the Rams game, they kind of keyed off the fact that he was so eager to get rid of the ball quickly that they were able to jump on routes, and he was forcing things that weren't there. He was like, all right, well, you know, I need to go through my progressions, not lock in on one receiver. He started doing better about that. I think he's just continually kind of looked for ways to evolve and grow. And I think that's what you need. And I think one of the most telling things here that most people don't know, in fact, I didn't know this till I looked it up today, is up until that Rams game in week 11, when he threw the four picks, you include that game. The Seahawks were dead, second to last in the NFL in turnover margin, -7. And Sam was the number one reason for that. After that game, from week 12 on, including the playoffs, the Seahawks are number one in the NFL in turnover margin at +7. And while everybody's been spending a lot of time, including on this show, worried about, well, the offense isn't nearly as powerful as it had been, it's also turning the ball over a lot less. It's turning the ball over less than the 49ers. It's turning the ball over less than the Rams. And I think everybody's just now catching on. Oh, this team could win a Super Bowl with a good running game, a good enough passing game, no turnovers or low turnovers, and that defense. And so I think Sam kind of aligning with what the team needs speaks to who he is as a player and as a person. And I give him a lot of credit for that. And this is the ultimate, I don't think the Super Bowl is the ultimate test. I think this is the ultimate test to demonstrate that he's really grown up and ready for the show.
Well, let's talk about the running game, because obviously Sam is dealing with the oblique, but an injury that can only be dealt with surgery is Zach Charbonnet's ACL. I was heartbroken for him when I saw this news. I got the notification on my watch and I was outside and I just let out like a no loud scream, and everyone around, you know, I had headphones in, so nobody knew really what was going on. But man, just so crushed for him because of what he means to this team. Mike McDonald called him the epitome of a Seahawk for this organization, and just the way that he, you know, converts on the field, but also is a leader on this team. So Rob, when you think back to, you know, the season that he has had, can you just describe what he has meant to this team?
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. And I think the fact that he was able to sort of mesh well with Ken Walker in this, it hasn't just been one or the other. You know, they've both really contributed. And even in the games where he's maybe had 9 carries for 32 yards, he's often got a couple of touchdowns or something in that kind of a game. So there's also the chance that, you know, you're now one injury away from having a bit of an issue at running back. But the comforting thing with this, you know, from a team perspective, is that if there was an injury that you're going to have, you have got Ken Walker, who's playing as well as any running back in the NFL over the last couple of games, who you can turn to now. And he's just changed agents. If you needed any more incentive to go out there and have a fantastic NFC Championship game and a fantastic Super Bowl, maybe even be a Super Bowl MVP, who knows? Like, this is it now. So that's a positive. But for Zach Charbonnet, yeah, I've always been a big Zach Charbonnet fan, dating back to his first year at UCLA. And he's a heck of a compliment to Ken Walker. And it's a real shame to lose him, especially for the pass protection side of things as well. You know, there are going to be some snaps where you would ideally have him on the field and he's not going to be there against the Rams. So that's disappointing. ACL surgeries, not that I'm an expert or anything on this, but you know, the technology has changed so much now that it's not kind of the, like people were saying, oh, he could be out for a year. And it's like, that's not going to happen. Touch wood, you know, knock on wood, he's not going to be doing that. He's going to be out for that long. And he should be able to come back and make a full recovery. But it's a sickness to lose him this late in the season, because he would have been a huge part of this game and hopefully the next game as well.
Mike, Rob just touched on, you know, you could be one injury away from not having K9, and then guys like Velus Jones and Cam Akers and another name, George Halani, that people probably forgot about. Where do you see maybe some other running backs stepping up for this team?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because, like, you do need a lot of Ken running the ball, and it really just takes one play, you know. I've seen guys, I mean, I remember BBK, I'm never going to forget that, blew his ACL out on opening kickoff in the preseason, non-contact. Like, it really is, can just be fluky. I feel real bad about that. So I am a little worried that, yeah, you're one play away from needing a bunch of Cam Akers carries or something like that. But if Ken's fine, I really do feel good about the run game. Ken basically looking like Barry Sanders, you know, when Zach went down, was not surprising to me at all. I'm with Rob. The pass pro thing really stands out to me. I'm curious to see how they figure that out. You can put Ken back there, but maybe they experiment with like Brady or Robbie or AJ or something like that back there. There's a few ways you can manipulate, you know, your third down packages.
Just give him the ball. Just let him run, honestly. Come on. He's like a running back anyway at this point.
I guess on like 3rd and 17, they can run it. You know, it would find some success. So maybe you don't need any pass pro there. But then also, I do feel just bad for Zach because you don't really know how a guy's going to respond to knee surgery. Like sometimes you're fine. You know, I watched Jordan Brooks just smoke his on like New Year's Day and was the week one starter. That was nuts. And then Rashad Penny smoked his in December of 2019 and then came back, I think, in December of 2020 and basically had a lost 2020 season. He didn't really do anything at all, you know. So every guy is different. You never really know, you know, like Odell smoked his in the Super Bowl. Didn't really play that, I think, that next year. So it's tough. There's no guarantees that Zach is back for the 2026 season, and then his contract's up. So who knows what his future holds just as a pro after this. So that's unfortunate. You know, I do feel really bad about that, because running backs, you really just get that one shot to get the payday, so you're set up and, you know, have that kind of second run of being the guy somewhere, whether it's with your own team or a new team. Who knows if Zach gets that. So it's a good opportunity for Ken. You know, it's unfortunate how he got it, but I do think the team will be fine. I think they've found something in the run game. The Niners front is awful, so I don't know how instructive any of that is per se, but just it seems they've hit a sweet spot with like when to call stuff, how to figure out when they get in the loaded box or a light box, because teams are disguising that, trying to confuse them a little bit. Everybody on the perimeter is blocking really well right now. Even seeing Jack's blocking really well, which is nice to see, you know, because you know Bobo's gonna do it, you know Cup's gonna do it, but like how many snaps are you gonna get away with like your two receivers being Cup and Bobo, right? Like you need Jack's, you need Shaheed on the field. They also have to be able to stick their nose in there and go crack safeties, and they've been doing that really well. So I feel good about the run game, but yeah, I feel really bad for Zach.
Brian, how confident are you that the Seahawks can sustain their rushing attack?
Pretty confident. I mean, I loved watching that team run the football on Saturday. And frankly, I've loved watching them run the football the last few weeks. And go all the way back to week 16 against the Rams when Ken Walker ripped off a 55-yard touchdown. And everyone's like, oh, that was fun. Like, would like to see that some more. And guess what? You're seeing it more. Like, I thought this last game, every single time Ken Walker touched the ball, it looked like it was going to go the distance. Like every time. And it didn't. But he certainly got in the end zone plenty. And for people that don't remember, quick aside, did anyone get the Conehead reference with Ken Walker, how he's doing the little like celebration like this after his touchdowns? Yeah. So
I missed it.
If you go back a year, Ken Walker blocked D'Amador Lenore into the ground. Like, and D'Amador Lenore's had a history of like some cheap shots during games with the Seahawks and talking.
No.
And so Ken Walker
really
blocked him into the ground. And after the game last year, Lenore called Ken Walker, said, "What a dork." That Conehead, something around long, calling him a Conehead. And so every time Ken Walker scored in this game, he was like, damn straight, buddy. So I love.
Did you see that Darnold did it as well at one point?
I did not.
Darnold was doing it too. And the weird thing is he doesn't have a cone-shaped head. It's a very round head.
Like, it's Lenore is just the worst. But I just, getting back to your question, I think Ken Walker's playing his best football, maybe of his career right now. I think he's playing with fresh legs. I think I talked to him a few weeks ago before all this kind of was going on. I was like, are you ready to carry this team? Like, if they need you to carry them all the way. And he's like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. He just hired a new agent. He knows what's going on. And interestingly, if you look at the Seahawks offense, the rush offense, since week 17, basically since the last time they faced the Rams, it's the fourth best rushing game from an EPA perspective in the league. And the Rams run defense, first time they played, it was the third in EPA per rush. The second time they played, it was 11th. It's been the 14th since then. So their run defense is getting worse. Seahawks run offense is getting better. And frankly, I think George Halani, if they get him back, is a great add. I think George Halani is so good that they were finding reasons to get him on the field when they had Zach Charbonnet and Ken Walker. So, yeah. And I, by the way, I'm also a big Velus Jones fan. I think he's a guy that can add some things to that offense as well.
Well, Brian is all for it. Whoever it is, we'll take any of the running backs. And I don't think it's a coincidence that K-9 has three touchdowns, you know, in a game that Zach Charbonnet goes down. And that's just really, you know, Brian, you touched on it, but what you've seen with this team, just their ability to pick people up, especially on the defensive side as well. And it's probably safe to say by now that the entire league knows the dark side defense and they are known as that identity, but they might not know about our new Dior gear. And you know what? We're cutting Rob out, I guess, because he's not in this. And maybe it's the Seahawks collective knew that he did not get our new Dior gear. But tonight I am wearing my Dior gear. It's the Hawks green color overshirt because I'm in Nashville and it's actually freezing and I didn't bring any warm clothes here. So it's a perfect added layer to go with my Dior jeans. And I guess while we don't have Rob on here, I'll just quickly ask both of you, how is, you know, week two, Mike and Brian, going with your Dior gear?
I actually wore mine to the game. I did. Not the top. Yeah, oh, okay. I wore the pants. I wore the pants. Because I had already worn the shirt here. So I was like, I don't like doubling up. I don't even wear the same shoes 2 days in a row most of the time. But I do. I did rock the pants. So I think I posted a picture on my Instagram. Maybe I have it somewhere. But yeah, those were comfy. Those were good. Wore them to the baby shower. Wore them to the game. Yeah, got good use out of those. Those felt good. Those are actually my second pair of the black Dior pants too. So I'm all in. Those felt good.
Yeah, I got mine on right now. I'm gonna spare you the viewing of me in jeans. I don't think anyone needs to see that, but. But yeah, I love them. They're kind of my everyday jeans at this point. And I think I read something that was, I didn't realize, but now makes sense after having worn them for a while, that they've got this like Cool Max thing that keeps like your temperature regulated and keeps you cool. And that's one of the things, like sometimes you get home after wearing a day of jeans and you're like, I got to get in my pajamas immediately or shorts or whatever else. Maybe that's just me. But these are just super comfortable, like happy to have them on all the time. And it's nice to genuinely like the partners that we're working with and the products that they make. And that's the case here.
Well, hey, if they do have that cooling effect, maybe you can cut one of the legs off and put it on your shoulder, Brian, because you're sore from all the clapping at the Seahawks game. And hopefully we'll give you another opportunity to do that. But check Dior out now. Get 15% off your first order at shopdior.com/gohawks. And we'll see if we can get our guy Rob back in here now that we have officially excluded him from our Dior conversation. Rob, I am so sorry. First of all, I hate being exclusive. That is like one of my least favorite things in life. So we got to find a way to get you some of this merch so that maybe not 15% off, maybe you can have 100% off. We will get to it, but the Hawks, they would not be the Seahawks without this defense. And I'm really seeing them lean into the dark side and the mob mentality. I think it was DeMarcus Lawrence who had the mob chain on. I know we talked about merch, but now they got the bling. I don't know if you guys have seen that in the pro shops or anything. Mike, have you seen that around Seattle?
I saw that chain. I would love one of those. Who is making those? Can we get a discount on that? That was fly. Oh, that. And then Jax is one of one chain. He doesn't wear it every game because he's a fashion icon or something now, I guess. But when he does wear the one of one, that and the mob chain, some good ice over there at the Seahawks got.
They are definitely feeling it and loving having their own identity merch. But one of the stats from this defense, I mean, you could bring up so many, was just that they haven't allowed a touchdown in two games. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. And a guy that is helping that happen is Ernest Jones. And Rob, I did hear that he was sick before this game. Is that right?
Yes, that was mentioned. Apparently, according to my Madonna, it seemed like he was actually pretty sick. Like he wasn't just, he was a bit down and like the day of the game, he had been quite ill. And the other thing is that they've not given up a touchdown in the last two games. It's against Kyle Shanahan. And Kyle Shanahan has been able to put up a lot of points. I mean, look what he did to the Bears before they played Seattle. He nearly scored 40 points in that game. They went to the Eagles and scored touchdowns. We're very creative in scoring some touchdowns as well. And yet the Seahawks have managed to shut him out of the end zone twice. I mean, they barely got... I don't think they got in the red zone, did they, at any point in the game? So it's fairly remarkable. I don't think that's just injuries. One of the things I actually wrote about afterwards was, you know, you kind of get the impression that the Niners were absolutely woeful from the first kickoff throughout. But in the first half, you know, they did have some, they were building some drives. You know, they did get into field goal range a couple of times. They seemed to be checking down to Christian McCaffrey quite well. They were getting him into situations there. So it's not as if they were totally useless, but as soon as the Seahawks sort of understood what they were doing, they just took it away. And this defense is, it's somehow, it's played very well all season. It's taken it to another level. And the way that I would like to shake the cage for them going into this game, because I'm sure they're all sat listening to this right now, is to say, listen, fellas.
They actually, we had Ernest Jones actually come in as a guest when you were gone for the Reeves. He was talking about the Dewar gear, but we just had to choose between you or him. Sorry, we chose him.
So the most recent, well, the only kind of bad game they've had recently was that Rams, sort of three quarters of the Rams game. And even in overtime, they gave up the big play. Like, what an opportunity now to, like, all the Rams are talking about, we need to come back to Seattle to make amends. Like, Sean McVay, we were expecting to come back and have another game against these guys to put it right what happened at the end of the last game. I want the Seahawks defense to have that. They've got something to put right here. Like, what better way to go into a Super Bowl than to just really limit Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford. And the Bears, to their credit, did a really good job doing that at the weekend. Like, they didn't win the game, but they managed to limit the damage there and give their quarterback a chance and their offense a chance to win that game. Can the Seahawks do that as well? You know, they're going to need them. And if they can do that, they can deliver that great performance, they're going to be... Look, there's an opportunity here for this defense to go down in history. I don't think that's hyperbole. Like, the 2013, you know, LOB, cool nickname. Everybody remembers that. You're now here. It used to be everyone used to mention the 85 Bears, you know, like 15 years ago. And now people talk about the LOB and Denver's defense when they won the Super Bowl, stuff like that. Here's an opportunity to be this decade's version of that. Go and take it. Have people talk about the dark side defense for the next 10 years. In 10 years' time, hey, this reminds me of Seattle's defense in 2025. Go and take it. Like, and they deserve it. And it's been a privilege to watch this so far. So they deserve to finish the job.
Brian, when you hear that, do you feel like it is a hyperbole, or are you all in with that take?
No, Rob's 100% right. And I mean, it's not really even a take at this point. I mean, you look at DVOA is an independent objective view of how offenses, defenses, all these things perform. And it already has the Seahawks 2025 dark side defense as better than the 2013 defense. Now, I think that's a fun debate to have, and I'm not here to say that they're better than the LOB. And I don't know that you really can earn that right without a Super Bowl ring, right? Like, the LOB did some pretty amazing things, including what they did to Peyton Manning. They did him really dirty in that Super Bowl. So I think they've got more to do, but it's in that realm. And now you're talking about the last, 8 weeks or so, they're allowing like 11 and a half points per game. And that includes the 37 points they gave up to the Rams in that one. So, you know, I look at that game and I remember, like, people, I think people have a little bit of warped memory of that game as well, because the Seahawks were winning early in that game. And even at the end of the half, they were going down to score, and Cooper Kupp has that fumble, uncharacteristic of Cooper Kupp, but they were going down to at least get 3 points and looked like they were going to maybe get seven. They were ahead at the first part of the third quarter, and then it was the turnovers that started, making that a uncomfortable game and a game that looked like it was over pretty much in the fourth quarter. So I think a lot of those yards came early and then late overtime and that nature. And I think if you look at how the Seahawks played in that game, the thing that really got my attention was the Rams offensive line pushed them around a little bit in the run game to start with. That's the only offensive line I've seen do that all year. They made an adjustment, added another person to the line in the second half, and the Rams could not run at all in the second half. First game, Seahawks gave up some big runs, some explosive runs, and then they locked it down. I think that's a sneaky big part of how this game's going to play out, is whether this defense can figure out the run game of the Rams from the jump. If they do that, I think that there's a really good chance the Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl.
Well, maybe the Seahawks defense can talk to the Seahawks offense, because clearly we had a little cool story in moment that I saw. Also, they had the mic'd up version of the story in real time that happened against this team and against the 49ers. And it was Leonard Williams basically having a conversation with Gray Zabel. And he was basically saying, hey, man, this is what you got to do to get to the quarterback through the center in short. And Leonard Williams, who is the vet, listened to his rookie. And that's what you see with this selflessness. And what happened? Leonard Williams gets the sack and credits Gray Zabel after in the post game. And Mike McDonald called it a microcosm of how our team has gotten to this point. It's a very Mike McDonald word, Mike. So I'd love to know, just when you heard this story come out from Leonard Williams, then maybe you saw the mic'd up clip on social media. What did you think about it?
Yeah, I did see the clip. I was waiting for that too, because I was like, everything's recorded these days. Like, I'm sure they have that. And I watched the little all access thing they put out every Tuesday usually. So I'm like, all right, let me see it. That was cool. What stood out was Leonard's humility to be, a year 11 all pro and heed some advice from the young buck. You know, it reminds me of something Mike McDonald has said several times, like a good idea can come from anywhere. And he's correct. You know, a good idea in that case came from Gray. The insight from Gray wasn't like the greatest schematic thing ever. It was like, hey, the center slides to you. Well, yeah, you're an all pro. They usually slide the center to the all pro like that. That's not like this big brained idea. But either way, that it spoke to the relationship that they have, where he could be like, hey, Leonard, I'm telling you to do something. You know, that's huge. You know, a lot of rookies are just like, I'm going to just shut up and do my job, which is fine, to be very clear. But when you can take that to the next level, you can see the impact it has. It reminds me of Ernest Jones, who was like, yeah, my first year I'm on a team with Aaron Donald. So I just shut up and do my job. And then they brought in Bobby the next year. He was like, more shutting up, for me, because of who else was on the team. And that made perfect sense, even though that's not necessarily Ernest's natural disposition, I guess, to be shutting up. He's vocal. So for Gray and Leonard to have that is cool. For Leo to be humble enough to be like, that's a good idea. You know, what I'm doing is not working. And I think they only had, two sacks on Purdy. So it's not like they needed some advice, to be honest. They need some this week. I don't think they've sacked Stafford in a game since 2023, maybe. Like, it's been some time. They don't get this guy on the ground. So maybe Gray should lead the next D-line meeting. I'm not sure. But that was a very cool moment, mostly because, yeah, like Leo's role in that just said a lot to me about who he is and who Mike McDonald is. Again, I think that was what Mike McDonaldism come to life there. That was great. And yeah, like, it impacted the game. They didn't get Purdy on the ground much. And that's why they did move the ball a little bit in the first half. And I think maybe early in the second half, too, because Purdy was just running around everywhere. But then once Nicky Minmore just stopped leaving his man, they were fine. So, but anyway, they still need to get to Stafford. So that moment was cool. And hopefully, yeah, Gray leads the D-line room this week and tells them how to get to number 9.
That was a great video. I'm so glad that they were able to capture that and put it on social media. So if you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. But I was listening to another presser from Mike McDonald this week, and something he always says, it just makes me crack up every time he says it. That's some high-powered stuff. So I'd love to know from you, Rob, after listening to Mike McDonald talk this whole season, this is specifically, is there like a quote or a phrase that he always says that you will never forget?
Yeah, well, it's probably quite a serious answer rather than a fun one. But the thing that has really resonated with me is how often he references letting the game declare itself. And I wrote about this in the week because I think watching that Bears game was another example of this. This thirst to say, this is who I am. You know, it doesn't matter what the game is, what the weather is, who the opponent is. I am going to go out and I am going to stick to my principles, even if it's the game it takes that that's maybe not the best thing to do. And I do think when you are playing in a frigid Soldier Field and the snow's coming down and you're playing the Rams and it was a close game, it was not a shootout that game, that you have to adjust and pivot and play the conditions and the opponent and the situation. And Ben Johnson didn't do that. And I think that contributed somewhat to the way that they lost. And, you know, there was the game. I mean, even Dan Campbell, who is the man who has played a big part in this kind of mindset, admitted when they lost to the Eagles earlier in the season that if he had been more conservative, they would have had a better chance of winning the game. And when Mike McDonald talks about letting the game declare itself, he's showing to everybody that he is not sort of one track mind, stubborn, this is who I am. If the game calls to be aggressive, you'll be aggressive. If the game calls to be conservative, you'll be conservative. To me, that feels like common sense. Like, I am never going to kick a field goal. I'm always going to go for it on fourth down. Funnily enough, in Ben Johnson's case, I'm going to go and be aggressive until the point where you actually have to lay your cards on the table at the end of the game and go for two rather than kick the field goal and go or the extra point and go for overtime. I don't buy it. I think you have to play the situation. And I really admire that about Mike McDonald. And if they need to be aggressive and if it's a shootout this weekend, I'm sure he will do that. But the Seahawks haven't been playing many games where they've had to do that. And I think if it's to our benefit as sort of Seahawks fans or media that he has got a slightly different take to some of these other coaches who I think are overthinking things a little bit.
Well, we hope that we would have the coach who is not overthinking it. But let's get to that game because there is surely a lot to talk about against this Rams team. But before we do that, let's hear a quick video from our sponsor this season, the Sleeper app.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using the code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Hey, let us know if you've used our code. I'm super curious about it. And if you haven't, now is the time. So check it out, the Sleeper app, because it's great to keep up with what's going on. News alerts, live scores, stats, and even when real money, you can follow sports apps all over. So use the Sleeper app. Make sure you check out the number one sports app today and try it out for yourself. Use promo code HMA and you'll get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms for use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out the Sleeper app today. And guys, I know we mentioned Zach Charbonnet and obviously Sam Darnold with some injuries, but also the left tackle, Charles Cross. He left the game early, and I do want to make sure we cover this. So, Brian, what should we know about this potential injury?
Yeah, not great. I mean, Charles had the hamstring injury before the last Rams game and missed the last 3 weeks of the season. Comes back, is practicing, looking good, feeling good, and then during practice has a knee injury. We don't know what caused it or what's going on, but he's wearing a pretty hefty knee brace. And then he plays in this game and ends up leaving with a foot injury. And as far as Mike McDonald knows, they're not necessarily related, but I don't know if they're the same leg. And it doesn't even matter if they're related or not. He's got multiple injuries. Mike McDonald said he's day-to-day. And additionally, because Josh Jones was the guy that was backing him up for those times, was so injured after the Carolina game, he barely was able to play in the 49ers game. He didn't even practice last week with a knee injury. There's a chance he might come back this week, but if he can't come back, you're looking again at Amari Kite, undrafted free agent rookie, who did get 17 snaps in this game and I think had some nice moments as a run blocker. But Jared Verse is a very, very different beast than the guys that the 49ers are running out there. So, and the situation was also a little different by the time Amari Kite got into the game. So it's certainly going to be probably one of the biggest things to monitor, obviously, including Sam Darnold. But yeah, not ideal. not ideal.
Okay, well, that was probably the worst news that we've heard all day and the only time on this show tonight that I've actually felt my heart sink. You know, usually, Brian, you give us like a great injury report and like, it's okay. This guy's going to, okay, it's all good. We're going to move past that and talk about the Rams. But mainly, just to start, this is a huge game. And I really do not want to miss that. Like, it is such a joy, like Rob, you said, to cover this team. Right behind me, I found this photo and I decided to put up. This is me as a child, as a junior Seagal, okay? Like, I am so fired up to be cheering on this team. And I wish I got to be there at Lumen Field, but Rob, Brian, and Mike, just take me back. This is a big game, right? The conference championship. From your past experiences with this game, it has to be different, right? So Mike, when you think about just past NFC championship games, what memory sticks out to you?
Well, I remember watching the Packers game at a bar in Pullman, and the floor like moving when Jermaine catches the ball in overtime. And we're on the second floor. It's the bar called The Zoo, the Coug. I haven't been in a while, but I think it's the Coug. And I just remember thinking, oh no, Valhalla. That's where we're at, Valhalla, because that's two levels. I was like, oh, damn, we're going under. Like, this is it. I'm not even going to watch the Super Bowl because we're about to crash through this floor. And that was just a magical experience. I had a couple homies I went to college with. I'll give one of them a shout out. Shout out to the homie, Billy. I think he convinced the other homie to stay. Because they were going to go. They were just like, this is terrible. Like, because they don't, you know, Cougs tend to have like a love-hate relationship, particularly if you're my age. I'm 33 with Jermaine Kearse, you know, like he's a Husky. He's the source of some heartbreak. You know, I watched him catch the game-winning touchdown in the Apple Cup right in front of me in 2010. That really hurt. So like, you got four interceptions going to him. And if you're a Coug, you're like, come on, dog. Like, this is just not, I'm not feeling this. Let's bounce. And they stayed. And it was like, other than maybe, I think they're both married now, like probably other than that, probably the best decisions they've made in their lives is to stay there. So like, I talked to them like right after that. That was super cool. So yeah, and this, I imagine this is going to have the same feel. You know, I've been hearing from people I ain't heard from all week, you know, even last week, mostly about Sam's oblique. But like, just people are so hype. You know, I'm getting even more requests for tickets that I don't have access to. Brian, I've been funneling people to your site, by the way, for like the last like 3 weeks. All people do, Mike, tickets? Like, nope, go to HBeats or whatever your site is called. I've been plugging that because I have none. But just, it's just been so many, you know, people I ain't heard from, like, yo, Mike, we gonna win. What's going on? You know, people going to the game. Most of the people in that baby shower were in like Seahawks jerseys. You know, like it. The vibes has been really cool around here. You can just feel it. You can feel that something big is coming. It's really impressive. I know this wasn't your question, but it makes it more impressive what Mike McDonald is able to get these guys to believe that it's just another game. Because it is absolutely not. There's nothing to suggest that. You walk around the city, go get a cup of coffee. If you're probably seeing someone talk about Go Hawks or the game or something like that. Like, you just can't, you can't avoid it. So I don't know how in the world these guys are doing that and compartmentalizing that. It's really impressive, because I have a pretty tough mental. I don't know if I'd be able to do that this week with all that's on the line. And they did it. It was a normal game on Saturday, and they kicked the Niners' ass because they treated it that way.
Brian, just how big is this moment? Can you just describe this?
It's incredibly special. I mean, it's one of those things that if you don't experience it, it's really hard to articulate, because there have been kind of perfect moments in everyone's life. You know, you hope that's the case, like where everything just kind of falls together and it feels like you just want to be in that as long as possible, and they never last, right? That's just the way life is, and you have to have things that aren't great in order to appreciate those truly great moments. And every one of the Seahawks conference championship games have been on that list. Like, the environment, the buildup, the sense of community and connection to the people around you that were all there for the same reason. And one of the things that was really special about this past game that makes me even more excited for this coming game was how unified the stands were in terms of, you know, Seahawks fans. Like, the amount of red that was there was so much less than we have seen for years. And it wasn't for lack of trying from 49ers fans. But it makes a difference when you look to your left and you look to your right, and it's not an opposing fan who's annoying and, you know, cheering at the different things and what you're cheering for. And it emboldened everybody. And so it was loud. People were cheering at the right times in the huddle. You saw the 49ers like having to basically like force each other's ear holes and their helmets to the middle to try to hear what was going on. That won't even come close to what it's going to be like on Sunday. And so, yeah, these are singular moments. And that's why, you know, I would never tell anybody, like, everyone's got their own situations, their own finances, and you got to do things that are right. But if you have the means, even if it means you got to cut something else out for a little while, if you have the means to find a way to get there, get there. And if you can't do that, get to a bar, get to a restaurant, get somewhere that has the game on, watch it with other people in the city that are going through the same thing you are, because it just amplifies the whole thing. And you will never forget where you were, just like Mike, when these things happen. So, you know, let's hope we see a Mike Bennett, you know, riding a bike around the field. Let's hope we see a Hasselbeck holding something over his head. Let's hope for the next iconic moment for a franchise that's never lost one of these conference championship games at home. And, you know, there's every reason to feel confident that this is going to be another great day in Seattle.
Well, Brian, now I feel really bad about where I'm going to be. I'm going to be at a hotel in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, probably alone watching it in my room. So if anyone on the Seahawks Collective knows of like a Seahawks bar in Mobile, Alabama, please let me know. I would love to share in that experience. And Rob, I know you might not be in Seattle, but what's the game day going to look like for you?
Well, I will be watching. I'll be forced to watch it alone. It kicks off at 11:30 here. I'm probably wouldn't be the best company during the game, to be honest, either. I pace a lot. I definitely get my steps in during a Seahawks game, a big Seahawks game. But I can imagine how it will go if they win, because when they won the two in, my son was born in 2013, the day that the Seahawks beat the Texans. So he was a few months old when they won against the Niners. And I can remember when the tip happened, sort of celebrating very loudly and then running upstairs to declare that the Seahawks had won the game. My son was a pain in the ass. Like he wouldn't sleep. Like he would only sleep if you held on to him for the first few months of his life. And we tried everything that he just wouldn't stop screaming and crying all the time. So when you got him to sleep, it was a great thing and you could get your head down for a bit. And then I came running up the stairs shouting the Seahawks are in the Super Bowl. That I thought was going to be received with great. That's fantastic. I'm really pleased for you. That's not what happened. That was not the reaction that I got at 3 o'clock in the morning when they beat the Niners and everybody was awake, including the baby. And then the year after, I did exactly the same thing. Like I was sort of the last one up. It was the earlier kickoff that time. And I can remember sitting there leaning on, we had this like baby cage, like I called it a cage then, that sounds bad, like we put the baby in a cage, but it was like a thing to start, like a play area that was sort of sealed
play
off.
Play area, let's go with yeah. Play area. I like that way better.
So the play baby, area. Just so the baby couldn't escape and like go into the kitchen or anything like that. And so I was leaning on that and depressed and sort of upset and sort of collecting my thoughts about the fact that they'd lost that game. And then I got a little bit of hope and then a little bit more hope and then they won, and I can remember again sprinting up the stairs in our old house to declare that the Seahawks had won the Super Bowl again. And if I thought the reaction in 23rd for the 2013 NFC Championship was bad, this was a volcano went off in our house that I had run upstairs again to celebrate the fact the Seahawks had won. So if you were to ask me, what am I probably going to do if the Seahawks win? I'm going to run upstairs and tell everybody that the Seahawks have won at the top of my voice and probably get an absolute bollocking afterwards. But I wouldn't have it any other way. That traditions are there for a reason. So that's my plan. I hope they do it. I think we're all in the same boat. Like English sports fans are very similar to Seattle sports fans. The English football team's a bit like the Mariners. They never freaking win anything. And just as they get your hopes up and you start to actually believe, there's a crushing defeat. The Seahawks Super Bowl is the only time in my life that one team that I've followed has actually had success. And we were allowed to enjoy it for 12 months before the sporting gods decided that's enough of that. You now have to have the most miserable experience of your fandom with that second Super Bowl. So I kind of feel like It'd be nice to win another one. It'd be nice to get there. It'd be nice to spend 2 weeks talking about a Super Bowl and just living in that moment again. So I really hope that it happens, and I think it is going to happen. I believe that the Seahawks are going to win this game.
Let's all live in that moment with a scone in one hand and a knife in the other hand and celebrating like Rob. But I'm sure you all have a busy week coming up, gearing up for this game. So, Mike, what do you have coming up on your end?
Yeah, Chris and I on our Seahawks Man-to-Man pod, we're actually going to record a little later today. Our one big thing this week, I don't know if it'll be recappy this week. All right, spin it a little bit more forward. We're also going to have my homie Nate Atkins, covers the Rams for The Athletic. We'll have him on the show preview there. I'm curious to hear what he's been hearing from the Rams, who have a very talkative bunch of DBs over there. So that'll be fun. Chris and I are going to look at some film too. Again, that one will probably be spun forward as well. We look at some stuff that's applicable to the Rams. Might even go back to that game. Because that was on defense in particular, that was not a good game. So we'll look at that. And yeah, that'll drop. Let's see, one big thing tomorrow, Wednesday, and then film on Friday. And then I'm on dad duty Saturday, and then it's game day on Sunday.
I love it. Brian, what do you have this week?
Yeah, tomorrow morning we'll do first look. Dalton Wasserman of PFF will be on. Jeffrey Dean Morgan will join again. We'll have some fun with him. He's been great every week. Tomorrow night, Real Hawk Talk with the OG crew, Nathan, Ernst, Evan Hill, and Jeff Simmons. I've got something special planned for the beginning of that show. I guarantee you're going to want to see. So make sure you tune in for that, 5 o'clock Wednesday evening. And then Thursday, my gosh, got Brian Baldinger coming back. Friday, got Mike Sando and Dave Bowling, as well as Derek Klassen from the Athletic Football Show. So yeah, tons and tons of stuff coming for everybody the rest of the week.
No sleeping for anyone on this show. Rob, what do you have coming up?
Well, I've got my show with Puck, Jason Puckett tomorrow. And then I think I'm going to spend the Thursday and Friday probably stressing out, probably worrying. I do have some, in the last week, I've actually got it up here. Like I can tell you how many exact words there are. 8,897 words of scouting notes that I've compiled over the last 4 days. And I can't do anything with it because who wants to read about the draft right now? Like, nobody cares.
Hey, no, I'm going to the Senior Bowl next week, so I will be texting you right after this. We'll have a good talk.
See, it's there and it's ready and it's waiting. And I hope that no one's going to see that work for 3 weeks. Like, 4 weeks, maybe, like, because there'll be some celebrations. I do not want to be publishing an article from those notes on Monday or Tuesday. So that's my challenge to the Seahawks. Make sure that nobody sees any of that work for a while yet. But confident thoughts. The Seahawks are going to win.
Yeah, we would love to be talking about a potential Super Bowl, and that is what the Seahawks are chasing. So 12s from myself, be loud at the field. Brian and Mike, be loud at Lumen Field. The Hawks will host the Rams at 3:30 kickoff on Lumen Field. History is unfolding in front of us. I'm so excited about it. We know Rob Staten's going to be stressing out the rest of the week. I hope you can be a little more chill, but still have those nervous butterflies, because this is such an exciting time. Thank you so much for joining us on another Seahawks Collective. Good night, and go Seahawks.